Around the country, local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies seize millions of dollars worth of property every year. That property is then sold and used to expand the budgets of those police agencies. And oftentimes, the owners of the property are never convicted or even charged with a crime. It's a process called civil asset forfeiture, and it's completely legal. But a recent Supreme Court decision may signal a change in how the process can be applied. Manny Fernandez is the public policy director for the ACLU of Hawaii. She spoke with HPR's Ryan Finnerty about civil asset forfeiture and the recent Supreme Court case.
Civil asset forfeiture is a process by which the government can take your property and keep it or sell it and keep the proceeds. It's on this legal fiction that property can be guilty of an underlying offense, but it's done through a civil process, so you're not afforded any of the due process protections that you would be in a criminal procedure. It was very popular. These laws started to pass about 30 years ago as part of the war on drugs. And the idea behind it is that it immediately stops the commission of criminal activity by seizing sort of the fruits of that criminal activity or a vehicle for the commission of that criminal activity, and also serves as a future deterrent of criminal conduct.
And Mandy, what's the legal basis for this process?
So the legal basis for this is that it will stop the commission of criminal activity. And that's the legal idea behind it. But because it is because it's a civil proceeding, you're not afforded the same rights that you would be if it were through the normal criminal court process.
And could you just give a brief example of how this might be applied in the real world?
Of course. So a law enforcement officer, usually a county police officer, will pull you over incident to whatever traffic violation they're investigating. They might ask you if you are carrying a large sum of money with you. If you say, yes, I'm on my way to purchase a motorcycle for my cousin, I have $6,000 with me, they can seize that. On the idea that you are obviously going to use it for some sort of, you know, criminal activity if you have that large of amount of cash with you. In Hawaii, how this would work then is that the county police department would then send over a request for forfeiture over to the prosecuting attorney's office, who then would review it, and if they think that there are grounds for forfeiture, they would then petition the Department of the Attorney General, who then would process it and make a final ruling. What's interesting about this is that in Hawaii, every state or local actor, government actor along the way, they have the opportunity to actually profit from this property. So a police officer and the prosecuting attorney's office, they both know that if they are going to succeed in getting this $6,000 or $4,000, however much, process, if they actually succeed in the forfeiture, they stand to get a cut of the proceeds. So they get some of that cash back.
And Mandy, what's being done with this money that's seized?
That's interesting. It's an interesting question because in Hawaii, so the 25% that the law enforcement, the seizing agency gets, and the 25% that the prosecuting attorney's office gets, there's not any rules or regulations governing how they spend that money. So there's no check or regulation on that. They can use it for basically whatever they want. The other 50% goes into the criminal forfeiture fund, which largely pays out the salaries for the asset forfeiture division within the attorney general, who's tasked with processing these forfeitures. And then apart from the salaries, in addition to the salaries, law enforcement agencies can request funds from the criminal forfeiture fund for things like training.
So in some ways, it appears that there is a financial incentive for law enforcement agencies to use, overuse, or even abuse this process.
At every step along the way, every single government actor has a profit incentive to forfeit the property.
And as I understand it, you don't even need to be charged with a crime for this to happen, or it could be that someone else used your property in the commission of a crime, and then you lose the property.
That's absolutely correct. And the Hawaii State Auditor actually came out with a report that was released in June of 2018, and they reviewed all civil asset forfeiture actions that occurred between certain years. And what they found was that in 2015, in 30% of successful civil asset forfeitures, so property that was successfully seized and kept by the state, in 30% of these cases, either there were no criminal charges filed in a corresponding case, or those criminal charges were subsequently dismissed. So these are people who were not convicted of any crime relating to the property that was taken from them.
So what type of recourse does someone have who's in that situation?
Hawaii law makes it very difficult to get back the property that was taken from you. So if you can either... You can either do it administratively, where you sort of admit that the property was used in the commission of a criminal offense, but you basically plead that there was some sort of mitigating circumstances. But if you're innocent, and if your property is, you know, innocent, if your property was not used in the commission of a criminal offense and they wrongfully took it, your only recourse is to file a bond with the Department of the Attorney General and seek a remedy in court. You are not guaranteed an attorney because, again, this is a civil process. So you're not guaranteed a right to counsel, even if you're indigent. You might have to take time off work to attend the hearings. And all you stand to get at the end of it is the property that was taken from you. So if this is only a few thousand dollars, you can understand how somebody might not want to risk losing their job or spending that much money on an attorney just to get whatever was taken from them. On the other hand, if you lose, not only do you lose the property that was taken from you, but you have to pay the state's attorney's fees. So they don't pay your fees if you win, but you have to pay their fees if you lose. So naturally, most people are not going to challenge this action in court.
And so that brings us to the recent U.S. Supreme Court decision on civil asset forfeiture. Can you explain a little bit about the ruling and what its implications are?
Of course. So the case is Timms versus Indiana, and the case centers around a man named Tyson Timms who was arrested for selling just under $400 worth of heroin to an undercover police officer. And when they arrested Mr. Timms, they also seized his Land Rover SUV, which he had purchased with a life insurance payout when his father died, and he purchased that car for $42,000. So this is money that he obtained legally and used it to purchase a car. He eventually pleaded guilty to the drug charges, got some jail time, and a $1,200 fine. And the state still proceeded with the forfeiture petition to try to keep the vehicle because they said he'd used it to transport drugs. And when he challenged this, the trial court said that this was grossly disproportionate since there was a maximum of a $10,000 fine for the drug conviction that could have been imposed on Timms. And the property that was seized was valued at over four times that. So the trial court held that forfeiting the car would violate the Eighth Amendment's prohibition on excessive fines. And the Eighth Amendment reads, excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishment inflicted. An intermediate court ends up upholding that decision, but the decision was then overturned by the Supreme Court of Indiana, which said that this excessive fines clause of the Eighth Amendment did not apply to state action since the U.S. Supreme Court had not officially said that it was incorporated by the states. So it went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, which held in a unanimous ruling that the excessive fines clause of the Eighth Amendment does apply to the states because the right to be free from excessive fines is fundamental and deeply rooted in the justice system. This means that this clause protects people against excessive fines imposed by states to the same degree as it would for federal actions. But what they didn't touch on was the underlying constitutionality of this particular forfeiture or civil asset forfeiture as a whole.
So it's a more narrow ruling on this subject than it could have been.
The court only ruled that this clause of the Eighth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution applies to the states.
And so can we guess how that will impact the use of civil asset forfeiture here in Hawaii?
In Hawaii, it'll be interesting to see how moving forward the state courts evaluate challenges to individual forfeitures and potentially Hawaii's forfeiture laws, given that they can apply to misdemeanors, which carry a maximum of a $2,000 fine, and given that such a large portion of them are done without even obtaining a criminal conviction. However, it will need to be a case-by-case basis, and this ruling was not so immediately sweeping that we can say for sure that it's going to result in, you know, civil asset forfeiture being struck down as a practice or even individual cases, the plaintiff prevailing.
So we'll have to wait and see how it plays out here locally.
We'll have to wait to see how it plays out. We have two bills that are moving through the state legislature right now, and they're different, but both would require a criminal conviction for an underlying offense before the state could actually forfeit the property.
All right. Well, Mandy Fernandez, thank you very much for joining us from the ACLU of Hawaii to explain that today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
And as Mandy Fernandez said, there are two bills that would restrict civil asset forfeiture currently being considered by state lawmakers. We'll have links to both posted with this story on HawaiiPublicRadio.org.